drove into town every day from his country seat in a coach and four, and was content with nothing short of a bishop for the christening of his children. Little Henry, like the rest, had his bishop, but he was obliged to wait for him for as long as 18 months. In those days, and even a generation later, as Keble bears witness, there was great laxity in regard to the early baptism of children. The delay has been noted by Manning's biographer as the first stumbling block in the spiritual life of the future cardinal. But he surmounted it with success. His father was more careful in other ways. "His refinement and delicacy of mind were such," wrote Manning long afterwards, "that I never heard out of his mouth a word which might not have been spoken in the presence of the most pure and sensitive. Except," he adds, "on one occasion, he was then forced by others to repeat a negro story, which, though free from all evil de sexu, was indelicate. He did it with great resistance. His example gave me a hatred of all such talk." The family lived in an atmosphere of evangelical piety. One day the little boy came in from the farmyard, and his mother asked him whether he had seen the peacock. "I said yes, and the nurse said no, and my mother made me kneel down and beg God to forgive me for not speaking the truth." At the age of 4, the child was told by a cousin of the age of 6 that God had a book in which he wrote down everything we did wrong. This so terrified me for days that I remember being found by my mother sitting under a kind of writing table in great fear. "I never forgot this at any time in my life," the cardinal tells us, "and it has been a great grace to me." When he was 9 years old, he devoured the Apocalypse, and I never all through my life forgot the lake that burneth with fire and brimstone. That verse has kept me like an audible voice through all my life, and through worlds of danger in my youth. At Harrow, the worlds of danger were already around him, but yet he listened to the audible voice. "At school and college I never failed to say my prayers, so far as memory serves me, even for a day." And he underwent another religious experience. He read Paley's Evidences. "I took in the whole argument," wrote Manning, when he was over 70, "and I thank God that nothing has ever shaken it." Yet on the whole, he led the unspiritual life of an ordinary schoolboy. We have glimpses of him as a handsome lad playing cricket, or strutting about in tasselled Hessian top boots. And on one occasion at least, he gave proof of a certain dexterity of conduct which deserved to be remembered. He went out of bounds, and a master, riding by and seeing him on the other side of a field, tied his horse to a gate and ran after him. The astute youth outran the master, fetched a circle, reached the gate, jumped onto the horse's back, and rode off. For this he was very properly chastised. But of what use was chastisement? No whipping, however severe, could have eradicated from little Henry's mind a quality at least as firmly planted in it as his fear of hell and his belief in the arguments of Paley. It had been his father's wish that Manning should go into the church, but the thought disgusted him. And when he reached Oxford, his tastes, his ambitions, his successes at the Union, all seemed to mark him out for a political career. He was a year junior to Samuel Wilberforce, and a year senior to Gladstone. In those days, the Union was the recruiting ground for young politicians. Ministers came down from London to listen to the debates, and a few years later, the Duke of Newcastle gave Gladstone a pocket borough on the strength of his speech at the Union against the Reform Bill. To those three young men, indeed, the whole world lay open. Were they not rich, well-connected, and endowed with an infinite capacity for making speeches? The event justified the highest expectations of their friends, for the least distinguished of the three died a bishop. The only danger lay in another direction. "Watch, my dear Samuel," wrote the elder Wilberforce to his son. "Watch with jealousy whether you find yourself unduly solicitous about acquitting yourself, whether you are too much chagrined."